AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Justice and Drew, along with Sam. Drew will be back on Monday. He's traveling back from D.C. We are joined in studio this morning. Very pleased to welcome to the Friday Roundtable from the Wrong About Everything podcast and billboards all throughout Minnesota, Amy Koch.
You guys are everywhere.
Good morning, guys. We are everywhere. And we're even here.
And lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien.
Good to be here.
How you doing, buddy?
Good.
You all right? You good? Just rolling in, getting some coffee.
Yep.
Waking up. Got to get the break. Yep. I've got a ton of lawyery things to ask you this morning.
Lawyery
things. So okay. I hope you're prepared for that.
Yep.
I've been saving up all my lawyer stories.
I'm ready to be lawyerly
for just today. All right. First off, though, we do have some tickets to give away. Crash and Burn. If you ever wondered how comedians come up with their material, Crash and Burn Comedy Show offers a unique opportunity to observe the process firsthand. This was started by friend of the show and comedian Tim Slagle, and currently in its 10th year. And what's cool about this year's Crash and Burn is that they brought back all of the comedians who did it the very first year. So three nationally touring headlining comedians are now challenged to join Slagle to write and perform 20 brand new minutes of material. The comedians will then polish the material through workshops after each show and over lunch the next day. And the only rules is that you have to create fresh material that's never been performed on stage, and you have to keep it funny. So there you go. Caller number 5 right now, 651-989-5855. Caller 5 will pick up a pair of tickets, and you can go tonight or tomorrow, 7 o'clock or 9:30. Your choice of which event you want to attend. So caller 5 to 651-989-5855 if you want to go and check out Crash and Burn tonight or tomorrow night. Again, 7 or 9:30. They announced the Super Bowl halftime performers. You guys excited about that? Do you care at all? Does
yes.
it matter to you in the
yes,
least bits?
A little bit.
Does it?
I'm never bit. Impressed by the Super Bowl. But I'm
the
impressed.
Problem is it's mostly disappointing. Except Prince, I will say.
Yes.
I liked when Prince did it.
Yes.
Which
I think,
maybe in my Minnesota.
I think
side.
I kind of enjoy it when I'm watching it, but when they announce like who's gonna be performing, I'm never impressed by who they actually get to perform. I think they always do a good job, but I don't know. I'm never impressed
Jeff
with
O'Brien.
Who they actually get.
Yeah, I'm with Amy. The Prince one and then also the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
They remember they did Satisfaction. They said, we could have played this at Super Bowl I. that those two performances were, I don't know how you, and I think Paul McCartney's done it too. I think that's about, I don't think, you can't top them.
It always seems, the Super Bowl halftime show always seems to be better when, and I think that's going to be indicative for this year's performers. In my opinion, it's always better when it's a very established sort of icon, which is harder to get these days because they're either stopping touring or they're going by the wayside unless it's like Kiss or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it usually seems like your established long-term iconic performers seem to do the best job.
Yeah. Was it The Weeknd?
It was last
yeah.
year.
And I was like,
it was meh.
It was fine. It was meh. It was a little bit, Shakira and J-Lo I liked, I guess, but I didn't love.
So. Yeah.
yeah.
The one that always pops into my head is the Britney Spears Aerosmith.
That was a good one.
That was a good one.
Oh,
yeah.
That right. one I forgot about.
So this year's, it's Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, Eminem, Mary J. Blige, and Kendrick Lamar
okay.
are going to perform.
That one actually could be good because you've got a lot of veteran performers.
There you've
they
got
could
a
do
night,
something
yeah.
different.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, it's sort of an icon of hip-hop performers and,
yeah.
you know, relevant with obviously the times we're living in. But even beyond that, I mean, that's a pretty... To get Dre back up there and Snoop Dogg and Mary J. Blige and Eminem, I mean, that's a pretty sweet lineup.
Yeah, that feels like kind of a sweet little 90s or
yeah.
2000s. That's kind of my space. So
yeah.
And plus, you could get some really cool like duets there.
Right.
And mashups.
Yeah, so they'll perform with the Minnesota Vikings playing who?
Oh.
They did beat
Seattle.
Wow. I guess that's all they've beat this year so far.
But they did beat the Bengals.
No, Jeff? No.
Huh?
Not being that optimistic?
No, I'm not.
Vikings chances?
I'm not that optimistic.
The Vikings, it's fascinating for me, because I've been now here 5 years now, and the Vikings always have, the Vikings and the Packers always have a special place because those were the two teams, for whatever reason, throughout my radio career of doing it 26 years, are the teams that have followed me around in places where I've worked. Like, for some reason, multiple radio stations I've worked for in other parts of the country, I was surrounded by Green Bay fans. Really? And I actually worked, I worked for a Green Bay Packer, Willie Davis. He owned the, he owned the radio company that I worked for when, the alternative rock station I worked for in Riverside, San Bernardino. But at that same place, there was a classic rock station and a guy that I knew who was like the biggest Minnesota Vikings fan ever at a time when I was never all that much into football. So the Vikings and the Packers have always followed me around. So there's a little amusing amusing anecdote. another quick item here. Just want to get your thoughts on it. There's a big debate going on. I don't know if you know this or not. Did you know we had a state fossil?
Oh, no. What?
Wait, do we already have a state fossil?
We have,
or
are
we
they're presenting
one?
A bill.
I think we're presenting a bill because we're trying to decide.
Yeah, I know we have a state painting, state muffin, state.
Yes, I voted on the state apple, the state muffin.
Okay. Oh, you're right. Here it is. Okay.
Sport. What did you vote for the state muffin, Amy?
It's the blueberry muffin.
Yeah. We have a state dog,
right? That's the only correct choice. I think the black lab.
No, we do not have a state dog, and that's the source point. I wanted a state
I thought
dog.
There was a state. I thought they voted on like the black lab as like the state dog.
Wait, we have a state muffin, but we don't have a state dog?
That's what I said. And it should be a lab, right? Because of Raven and because of hunting and all of that. It's
sure.
Obvious.
Okay. Is that, okay. I'll take your word for it.
What about
you're right. And you are right. We are working on legislation. But why? Bean. But real quick, why the blueberry muffin?
Because it's what? Delicious. I don't know why the blueberry muffin. Some of these come from the students.
But there should be relevancy to this. There should be relevancy to the state, right?
Because everyone in Minnesota likes blueberry muffins.
They have a, right. It's a state painting is somebody that the artist isn't somebody. That, you know, we have
it's the prayer.
Leroy
it's
Neiman's the, from here, but no, let's get some other artist a painting. Some guy praying is the state painting.
That's the
you
state
know?
Painting.
See, the muffin should be like a, do they make like a Juicy Lucy muffin?
Oh, that would be something. Like a meat something. Muffin.
Well, could you do, like, imagine? Like, muffin. That would be a fun, actually be a fun bill if you did like, the state Juicy Lucy and then have the fight. You know,
state burger.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Have the
uh-oh.
Two bars fighting uh-oh. Over which one is legitimate yeah, Juicy
if only
Lucy.
We had a lobbyist that could get this done. I'll be coming to a legislator near you soon.
So, the Science Museum of Minnesota is working on getting to get a state fossil adopted by the legislature.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so this is the Science Museum of Arizona. So, right now, so apparently there's 9 candidates. We're just going to, there's 2 that they've narrowed it down to. It's either the mammoth state fossil. Mm-hmm. Or a giant beaver.
Were there giant beavers?
You know what?
Apparently.
I would go with like, mammoth if I had to pick between those
two. It's the
two.
Coolest.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the coolest. And I think that when you think mammoth, you think frozen tundra. And when I think Minnesota,
nah,
I think
there
frozen
you go.
Tundra.
Right. It feels right.
Yeah.
It's like they walked here.
Yeah. Right. They probably did.
They probably did.
Well, and I had, I read an article this week that we weren't that far. This is legitimate. This is not setting up for a jokey joke. But I read this week that we were actually getting closer, like within our lifetimes. Well, maybe not ours, maybe Sam's, but to actually bringing the woolly mammoth back to life. Like
would be so
that's
cool.
That's the target that brings about Jurassic Park is a woolly mammoth.
The woolly mammoth is going to bring about Jurassic Park.
But then it couldn't be the fossil anymore if we brought it back to life. Nope. Kind of takes away
it would disqualify it.
Kind of takes away the relevancy.
Well, I mean, there's still, that's not quite true because there's still mammoth fossils.
And actually makes the fossil cooler because, like, we brought this fossil back to life.
Yeah.
We are walking around talking fossil.
Mm-hmm.
Or not like, talking, probably, but who knows?
Maybe. You never know. They've been extinct.
How many people are actually excited about this, by the way? There's got to be like 5, right?
There's like 5.
I look at it as there's worse things the legislature could be doing than debating a state fossil.
You know, I'd rather they focus on this.
This doesn't raise my taxes in any way.
That's true.
Or does it?
I'd rather, you know, can we do this? Do we have a United States fossil? Because I'd rather have them debating that over this infrastructure bill.
Oh, well, you know what? Let's make a proposal. Let's find ourselves a D.C. lobbyist and get them on that. Let's distract them like squirrels.
That infrastructure. By the way, just a side note, I think you guys heard Sam's top 5. That infrastructure bill needs to die a horrible, painful death.
Mm-hmm.
It is. I think it is.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Everything I've seen is that the Joe Manchin and Kirsten Sinema will not budge on this reconciliation bill, and the progressives in the House will not budge on infrastructure unless they get their $3.5 trillion.
I cannot, and I know it's, and I know this has happened before, and I know this is nothing new, but I can't get past. Like, we know it's loaded with garbage. We've highlighted the garbage that it's loaded with, but you know, almost 2,500 pages, 444,000 plus words. How can you, in your right mind, vote on something that there's no way on God's green earth that I don't care how many interns that you had reading it, let alone yourself as a member of Congress reading to know everything that's in it. I mean, that's just gross.
Mm-hmm. Right?
I can't. I mean, just on that base level alone, I can't get past it.
Yeah, on a state level, we'll get like a 1,000-page bill. The HHS budget bill is typically 800 to 1,000, and that is
still,
it's massive. It's, that alone is like, most legislators are not going through it page by page. The committees are. They're taking bits and pieces of, but that takes you months and months. This is just, it's a behemoth, but I really think that's the point, right? Isn't it?
Of course.
The point? Of course.
Well, but.
Because then we keep finding things and going,
right.
Oh.
Well, yeah, you read it afterwards. You pass it. Then that's what the famous quote from Nancy Pelosi. You pass
right.
It, then you read it.
Well, two things on this. One, to you, Amy Koch, when it comes to those from the state level, so your 1,000-page bill.
Yep.
Is it designed in any way, shape, or form to be easily worked through? Like, is it crafted in such a way where you do not have to read the entire thing? You can get into it, or is that just a matter of nobody's reading this entire thing?
Well, no. So generally, the bill itself is crafted into articles and sections.
Sure.
And then we would get break down some research on every article and every section with a summary. In addition, those are typically bills that were heard in committee, and then they're loaded into an omnibus bill. But even on a state level, you can get big omnibus bills, and somebody could slide something in there that like we have people that have to read through them all, because the other side might make a proposal or say, oh, well, this is the language we talked about. And you got to make sure that everything that you agree to is in that bill, and nothing that you didn't agree to, because 1,000 pages, you could easily accidentally or intentionally slide something in.
Well, and I know I'm going down a rabbit hole on this, but to that, like, who are the individuals and how much are they getting paid?
Right, not enough.
Right, to present you with the proper information,
right,
to make a good decision. But to you, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, in your world, I mean, every word matters.
Right.
Every phrase matters. Mm-hmm. And so, you are you faced with similar circumstances when it comes to lawsuits where they're just so big, or are they crafted in such a way to make it easier, like comparatively speaking to what you would see with a piece of legislation?
No, well, I mean, it comes up when I'm dealing with it with contracts, right? You have to, you know, words mean every word means something. So, you know, we have a big, you know, we could have a sale of a business, you know, you could have a 50-page contract, and you got to sit there and comb through it, and you're negotiating these little points on every little thing. And you know, I've never drafted a 1,000-page contract, you know?
Yeah, and to that too, going back to the infrastructure bill, I guess we haven't, yeah, I mean, you just, you know, raise another question, you know, as we kind of just work through this oddly. And that is, like, who crafted it in the first place? Like, how long has it been sitting there? Like, what, like, I mean, how, like, it's one thing to sit back and go, how do you read all of it? But let's drop back even further and go, well, how did it get created in the first place? And how long did that take? And how long have they been sitting on it?
Right. Well, on a state level, again, it happens in the session, and the bills that are in there are typically already been heard in committee, and that's what gets poured into the bill. This one, I don't know, were there committee hearings? How many committee hearings? Certainly not enough to hear this kind of a bill. So where did they come from?
Well, and mistakes happen. I remember, Amy, the year that the federal estate tax went to zero, Minnesota attempted to pass enact a state level gift tax, and they did it in conference committee, and they literally copied and pasted the federal gift tax statutes and renumbered them. And so I remember they eventually repealed it because someone told the commissioner of revenue, then told it was Governor Dayton, and they told the governor, you know, we can't retroactively enforce this to get everybody to get all to charge tax, and everybody was trying to avoid the estate tax. But I can remember when it was first enacted, everybody's like, how the hell are we supposed to read this thing? How do we interpret this? Why are there references to the Internal Revenue Code? They literally did a copy and paste job at the last minute to so we could have a state level gift tax.
And that is repealed it within a month. Passing bills in the middle of the night in a hurry and then trying to like appease something or make a, you know, make a change like that.
Do we say the system? So if this thing goes down, which we kind of think it's going to, right? We know the holdouts in terms of the in terms of the House. And by side note, did you see the clip of Kyrsten Sinema when she was when she was asked at the elevator, "Where are you?" She's like, "I'm right here."
Yeah,
like where are you standing? She's like, "I'm right in front of the elevator."
I've noticed, you know, Manchin and Sinema, the more they get arrows slung at them from the left, they seem to have more fun with it. I mean, they're taking pictures together now. You know, Manchin says, yes, if you want, go vote for liberals if you want liberals. You know, they seem to be relishing this role as being the spoilers.
Well, massive power. Massive power in what they're doing, right? They're the belle of the ball in D.C. Everybody wants to talk to them because by being this in-between person that's holdout vote, they get complete power over this. Whatever it is,
well, on the
$3 trillion, $1.5 trillion, whatever it's going to, you know, if it passes, it's going to be.
Yeah, I think ultimately when they broke it down because of sort of the maneuvering in terms of the way that it's put out and perpetuated within your cable news networks is $3.5 trillion, but the reality is more closer to $5.5 trillion when you look at it. But you know behind the scenes that Manchin and Sinema are getting props and feedback from individuals who also want to vote against it but can't. So you know, I mean, that's that power. There is that. In my opinion, you're right. You have the power that they feel, knowing that they can thwart this. But I also believe that they're getting phone calls from their fellow Democrat colleagues who also would like to not vote on this, saying, hold your ground, you got our back to keep this thing from going through, because they have to know it's bad. Well, or am I being too optimistic?
And I think part of it, too, is I don't think these bills are popular with the public. And so they're not getting, you know, you see the campaigns, you know, call so-and-so and tell them to vote for it. You know, this was a president that was elected because he wasn't the other guy.
Right.
There's no mandate here. And I think there's a lot of buyer's remorse in what is now being pushed forward. So you don't have that public pressure on those two to change their vote. They're just like, no.
Well, plus Manchin knows his state.
Right.
He knows his state.
Right.
He's like, this is the way he stays elected.
Right.
And frankly, the same thing with Kyrsten Sinema.
Right.
Arizona, there are pockets of it that have gone very wrong to the left. But, you know, a lot of the state is pretty moderate.
Yeah, just raised Sinema's polling numbers in Arizona are higher than Mark Kelly, is a guy who got elected last fall.
Oh, yeah. And don't get me started on Mark Kelly. I got too much history with all of that. All right. More coming up. We'll turn our attention to some local issues. Rochester schools to ban parents for 1 year if they don't wear, if they do not wear the mask to their council meetings. Not you can't come to the next one. We're going to ban you for a whole year. And then we'll dive into the lawsuits that we all expected were going to happen, have begun. You've got more than 180 Minnesota healthcare workers filing a lawsuit against the vaccine mask mandates. You got military, you got students. We have Jeff O'Brien, our lawyer extraordinaire, and from Wrong About Everything, Amy Koch joining us in studio for the Friday Roundtable. You're listening to Twin Cities News Talk. Oh. This hour for the Acme Comedy Company Crash and Burn tickets, and Kevin won. He will be going tonight, I guess, right, to the event.
That's right.
There's still some tickets available for Crash and Burn. Again, these are all the headliners from the first year, 10 years ago, Crash and Burn. Tim Slagle, friend of the show, is hosting the event 7 o'clock and 9:30 tonight and tomorrow night. They have to come up with all new material never before performed on stage. I can't imagine. I mean, you got to be like to go up there dry or just to write material. Like Tim Slagle said, the first time he did it, just went up there and just talked. I was like, I can talk on the radio and I try to be funny, but I can't imagine being in front of a crowd.
No,
thank you. Although I did do years ago, we opened Ontario, California. We opened an improv. I think it was on New Year's, and the guy that I was working with was also a comedian. He was funny, but he'd been doing it for years, never really made it, was also a talk show host. So I put together a set. I will not repeat any of that set, but I actually put together a set. It went as well as you would expect. This was 1998, 99-ish. But I remember the guy I worked with was Richard. He went by Dick, so it was Dick and Justice. That was the name of our show. I'm not kidding. But he told me the thing before...
Like, unironically?
Before I got... before... It was just Dick and Justice. That's what it was. I know. In retrospect now, it seems... Like, at the time, it didn't really seem like it was... It was an alternative rock morning show, so it didn't really, you know, seem anything. But I remember Dick telling me before I went on stage, he was like, listen, he says, look, the thing you got to remember is, because this is unlike radio, for the most part, I think, but for a comedian going on stage, the audience wants you to succeed. Mm-hmm. They're not there to see you fail.
Compared to radio, where the audience wants you to fail all
well,
the time.
But they're critical, you know what I mean? You could have your critical people.
Radio so, listeners are often quite critical.
That was the only thing that got me through it. Was like, oh, that makes all the sense in the world. Like, turn your, there you go. Yeah.
They want to laugh.
Yeah, exactly.
They want to laugh and they want to see you. I always feel like that. When I see a comedian on stage, and especially if they're bombing, I'm like, oh no, okay, like I'm going to try to find something to laugh loudly about,
right,
so that he can know it's okay.
It's like one of the few okay, circumstances where that actually happens.
The closest analogy in my world is, you know, I'll do continuing ed programs for other lawyers, and there's invariably, you know, four or five lawyers in the crowd that think that they should have been presenting. So you got to bring your A game, because otherwise, well, you know, you get the hand raisers, right? And they have to make your point that somehow they know so much more and should have been up there instead of you. So that's always, there's no pressure there at all.
Well, it's a difference between, in my opinion, in this case, it's a difference between sort of a free audience and a paid audience. You paid to be there. You want to be entertained. You're willing to give a benefit of the doubt. So you're looking for the joke. Where if we're watching an award show like the Oscars when it used to be good, you know, there's a level of they get a new host and you always kind of go, all right, how are they gonna? Well, you don't have anything invested in it. You're not paying for that. You're just watching it on TV, so you can be overly critical. All right, speaking of being overly critical, let's go here. Rochester parents and community members who refuse to wear masks during school board meetings will be banned from district property for
what?
1 year. Rochester Public School Board Chair, idiot and totalitarian Gene Marvin. Or I should say authoritarian, huh? Announced the new policy during a September 21st meeting, saying this. We have implemented a policy that is very easy to understand. If you want to be in this building, you need to wear an appropriate effective mask. Never goes on to talk about what an appropriate or effective mask is. I guarantee you, if you went in there with a gator, which they have shown not to be effective at all, she probably would totally allow that, right? If you don't want to wear a mask of that kind, don't be here. Watch the meeting from home and email your thoughts to board members or call or write letters. We will respond. Marvin did not define what counts as an effective face mask. And the efficacy of face masks, of course, in general, has been called into question by recent studies. Starting tonight, she went on to say, if you choose to wear a mask, an appropriate mask, while you're in this building and when approached by an administrator, you refuse to comply, you will be trespassed. That means you will be prohibited from setting foot on RPS school property for 1 year. A police officer may escort you out of the building if needed. These types of individuals need to be voted out of office.
Yeah, they do.
At the very, very first moment. This is you're a jerk. You're an authoritarian. You are ignorant of reason, logic, and science at this point in time.
Well, it's Rochester. It's a health town. So I'm not entirely surprised that's where it's happening. What I will say is just what you said. This is the local government, right? And this is, they have to be held accountable by the parents of the school. That's what's gotta happen here. So we can be upset, but like the parents down there have to stand up. I just was speaking to a state senator from, like the Laverne area, and apparently Laverne, Minnesota instituted a mask requirement for their students that lasted a day. Parents showed up on the lawn of the school to talk to the school board and the superintendent, and they removed the mask mandate the following day. So you do have power, parents. you know, if you don't like what your school's doing, you can vote out the next election, and you can also go to the school board meetings. You can go, you can call the superintendent's office. This is local government at its best and worst.
I would say in regards to this specific instance, you know, there's obviously some legal ramifications here. I mean, we have open meeting laws. This is government property. You know, it's you know, anytime you're dealing with government passing restrictions on free expression, free speech, anything like that, which not wearing a mask would be, you're dealing with this balancing. And I don't know what a court would do, if this was challenged as a violation of constitutional rights. So it'd be interesting to see what they do.
Well, and there's the and again, and we'll get into a little bit more of this coming up, because there's a few more details, and then I want to get both Amy Cook and Jeff O'Brien's thoughts on this plethora of lawsuits that are now being filed that we were all expecting in the wake of Biden's mask mandates. But the one thing before we go to break I wanted to mention is that really sticks out to me. And I'm wondering, and we can talk about this coming up, Jeff, from a legal standing, is they are completely ignoring all the other steps that you could take. Like, if this is for safety reasons, right? Because it's all, we all know the truth of what's going on. This is all symbolic. This is not about science at all. What this Rochester Public School Board chair, Gene Marvin, is doing has nothing to do with science. It's all symbolic. That's all that it is. And the proof for me is there is no talk of social distancing at all anymore. Right? Mm-hmm. So if you look at safety, I mean, there's other options here. You don't have to wear a mask. We can go back to how it was with what we were doing last year, where people were gathering before we were really even pushing masks, and we just had everybody socially distanced apart. That is completely gone in the discussion, as is sort of cleaning your hands and the normal things you should do to try to keep yourself safe. We'll get into some more details on this coming up. We do have a news quiz. Slightly different today, by the way, just saying. There's no audio components. But there is a new element to it.
That you made will be a new added. Category.
I made a new category.
So it could be anybody's game.
Is it like
point.
Star Wars trivia?
No, it is not.
Oh, okay.
There is no Star Wars involved. I did try to make it fair for everybody. So that'll be coming up about 1 hour from now. Now, this is going to throw a wrench into, in my opinion, sort of the normal standards by which people usually try to determine who they think is going to win the Friday news quiz.
So whoever wins, do we get an asterisk by our name or what?
You won my news quiz. Okay. So you could be the winner of the John Justice news quiz as opposed to the Andrew Lee one. So get your picks in, though. This is going to be, you know, we're going with wide open this morning. Right? Use the hashtag TCNT. Let us know who you think is going to win. Sam, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, or from Wrong About Everything, Amy Cook. And we have more on these mask mandates and the lawsuits that are being filed across the country next on Justice. And
I donate plasma with BioLife because I like giving back.
I donate plasma with BioLife because people living with immune deficiencies need my help today.
I donate plasma with BioLife because I don't have a good reason not to.
I donate plasma with BioLife because I get paid.
I donate plasma with BioLife because I like a little extra spending cash.
I donate plasma with BioLife because I want to buy a TV for my bathroom one day.
Whatever your reason, BioLife makes it easy to earn up to $1,200 in your first month of donating. BioLife, there's purpose in your plasma. Visit BioLifePlasma.com or tap the screen to learn more.
103.5 and on iHeartRadio with your smart device, because you deserve the truth.
Justice and Drew on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Got the Friday news quiz coming up. Amy Cope from Wrong About Everything, the podcast and billboards all over Minnesota, joins us in studio along with Jeff O'Brien, lawyer extraordinaire, for the Friday roundtable. They will compete against Sam this morning for a different version of the news quiz. We do have the headline round. We do not have an audio round, but there will be a brand new component.
A new category.
John Justice quiz.
Sam is very excited
about the
new category.
Cool.
She's not been given anything in advance.
No.
She almost did, by the way.
Why?
So Drew's not here. Okay, he'll be back on Monday. He's traveling back from D.C. Every morning, I bring in the stack of prep, and I make copies, okay? And so
so that I have copies of all the same stories.
Right, and so you don't send and Drew has everything that I put together in the morning. And so the news quiz was in the stack.
Oh, no.
So I ran the copies, and I was walking in, and I went to set it down before Sam got here, and I went, oh, wait a second. And then I went and looked, and I'm like, oh, yeah, sure enough. So I had to yank out. Oh, no. I had the news quiz, and all the answers were in there. So she almost walked away with it, you guys.
Darn.
Rochester.
That might happen anyway.
Rochester.
It's doubtful.
Rochester schools to ban parents for 1 year if they don't wear masks. Look, man, the individuals like this, the school board chair, Gene Marvin, and I'm with you. Like, I understand the dynamics going on in Rochester, and this is certainly not the first story like this coming out of that area. But in my opinion, these individuals should be last on the list of adults that should be in charge of decision making for children. You get further into the story, Marvin, who said that if you don't wear a mask, you could be in violation of trespassing, banned from the property for a year. Like, even if it was just if you come to the meeting and you're not in a mask, you're not allowed in. Like, I'll give you, I'm not going to agree with it, but at least, like, okay, put a mask on. If not, come back and have one. But to ban somebody for a year?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Well, and I think there's some confusion probably. I think that the school board probably thinks, or the school district thinks, well, because, you know, the governor was able to impose all these restrictions and mask mandates last year, you know, we can do that too. But, you know, last year you had a governor, you can argue, you know, pro or con, but he was operating under a statute that gave him emergency powers, and they had declared a public health emergency. You know, and I dealt with, you know, was intimately, you know, involved with a lot of these cases last year because we had the one where we sued him. So you could see courts saying, well, we're going to give the governor, the state, the deference in a time of a public health emergency. But that was all wiped out. I mean, there's no declared public health emergency right now. He has no emergency powers. Nobody has emergency powers. This is, now you get back to this balancing test I was talking about, and they're going to say, well, is there a better way to go about this than banning everybody? You know, whose rights are being infringed upon more? The safety of the school board, or the rights of the free speech and free expression of the parents? And to what you mentioned, you know, social distancing, there's a lot of other things to do other than forcing everybody to wear a mask at these, when they're in the building there.
Right. Well, and as we've seen with vaccinations, which are at a super low rate now, the lowest, right, since the vaccines came out, these kind of like beat you over the head with the requirements don't work either. They actually make people go the other way.
Yeah.
There's even the polls where most Minnesotans are vaccinated, excuse me, and most Minnesotans think you should be vaccinated, but they don't want required vaccinations. They don't like the mandates. Americans, Minnesotans, we don't react well when people do things like this.
Right.
Marvin also did not clarify if the new policy applies to vaccinated individuals. In July, the board voted to require masks for children between the ages of 2 and 12, but not for children over the age of 12, since they can be vaccinated. But now they're telling adults, right? Marvin recessed a school board meeting earlier this month because there were a few people here who feel it's important to not wear a mask, she said. The board also cut the mic in a July meeting when a group of parents began praying. This sounds like an individual sort of. This sounds like this is one person's crusade, and I wish that somebody would go, or a media outlet would go to the school board chair Gene Marvin and just start asking some simple questions. Why? And if it's because of the health issue, then explain the difference between the 2 and 12, but not for the 12 and over unvaccinated. What if I'm vaccinated and if I come to the meeting? And to what Jeff O'Brien said, what if I just stand 6 feet away, because that has shown to be just as effective, by and large, in terms of science, as a mask is.
Right, and how will the courts view it? I think that's a really fascinating component.
Yeah, I think they're going to say if you're trying to, you know, protect public health, public safety, I think they probably say there's other ways to do this. I mean, this sounds a little bit like, what was it, the school board in Virginia, where they said, you know, they didn't want, you know, non-residents coming in. Was it Matt Walsh or whatever that was going around? And they said, well, you have to live in the district. You have to reside in the district. So he rented a house in the district so he could come to the meeting, right? This seems to be these seem to be less about public health and more about attempts to suppress speech on one side. And that's where the courts are going to say, if they get sued, the courts are going to say the balance, you know, in this balancing test, we're going to give deference to the parents versus the school district.
We're going to get into some of these lawsuits here on a number of different fronts. Students, healthcare workers, soldiers, when it comes to the mandates. But I have a question for both of you. And Amy Cook, we'll start with you. Do you think that at the end of the day, whenever that day ends, do you think that what we are going through now in terms of, because we're hashing things out. I mean, again, bringing it down to a very base level. We are arguing and hashing out things in a way, and so many different issues, more issues than I've ever seen in my lifetime. We are working through different things, you know, the overstepping of government and issues like this of school board meetings. You look at critical race theory and the battles that we're seeing on that front, and just so many lawsuits. It's hard to keep up. I mean, the number of lawsuit stories this morning was not hard to come up with, having Jeff O'Brien in studio. The question I have is, do you think at the end of the day we come out better? Do you think we get clarity on these issues, or do you think that things are just going to get worse and we're going to see more of this moving forward? Because there's a part of me, and I'll just add one more element, there's a part of me that would like to believe, optimistically speaking, that if we are going through lawsuits and reaching conclusions, we should be establishing a better set of standards. But I'm also very fearful that's not going to happen.
Well, and I'll let Jeff talk about the lawsuits and what they will bring out, because I am hopeful for the lawsuits as well. But I think just on a political level, I believe this can be a good thing. We are building the plane as we're trying to fly it.
Yes.
That's what's happening.
Yes.
Right?
It's a great way to put it.
This happened. We didn't know what we were doing. You know, nobody knew what they were doing. And we just started making rules and learning through those. So ultimately, in the end, every time you see super difficulty, we always come out better. I really think that. And I really think that people will learn from, you know, from the lockdowns, from the mandates. You also talked a little bit earlier about the unintended consequences mm-hmm. of the isolation and the stay at home orders, which we are only beginning to see. So I don't think it gets brighter right away, but I do think it gets brighter because we will learn.
We get contacted a lot about this lawsuit or that lawsuit. Someone wants to bring some lawsuit relating to some of these, to what's really a political issue. And I tell people, there's only so much that we as lawyers can do to correct what happens at the ballot box. You guys got to be smarter sometimes about what you're, you know, who you're voting for. And I think what I'm seeing is an awakening of parents at this, with dealing with the school board level. I think too many times conservatives focus on the sexy offices, right? The federal offices, the state offices, and not paying enough. You know, these are like the throw, people, you know, I get calls from neighbors, who do I vote for judge? Right?
Right. Right.
So it's the back of the ballot stuff. Nobody pays attention to it. I think this is causing people to understand the best, they can have the most influence at that level, and they can take action against this. And I think you're going to see, a lot more. I hope we see a lot more, common sense folks, running for school board positions so that this doesn't happen in the future.
You make a really, really good point with that. And I'm glad that you brought it up. It reminds me before I got into radio, I was a public real estate auctioneer in Los Angeles and Orange County, and drove, you know, anywhere between 200 and 300 miles a day, traveling around doing housing inspections and going and being an auctioneer, auctioning off, you know, homes that were being foreclosed on. I was involved in politics. My dad was a Reagan conservative, but it really was resigned to midterm elections, kind of interested, definitely the presidency. But the point I wanted to make was, I remember driving around and we get into election cycle and I think for the vast majority of people, it's this way. You drive through neighborhoods, you see all these signs, you don't know who these people are. They're school board members, right? They're council members.
City
there's,
council,
there's,
county
there's,
board.
Yeah, there's into what your judges and all that. And there was, you know, just very little importance and precedent placed on that. And once getting into talk radio, you know, some 12, 13 years ago, you do quickly begin to realize, as you said, and as you know, Amy, you know, you can make the biggest impact at the local level. There is this, to a certain extent, I think that the critical race theory issue and what the left attempted to do with the pandemic of shoving all this stuff in when nobody was looking, I'm praying is going to backfire. And I feel like so far it has been backfiring, because you're right. It is awakening, parents and individuals to the importance of local elections in a way they haven't before. It reminds me a lot of when the Tea Party came into prominence. And kind of what happened with that was what I think a lot of us expected was going to happen. It was you had a lot of people who didn't get involved in politics, suddenly got involved in politics, but over a long enough timeline, those people that were newer kind of dropped back off the radar and you were left with the individuals that still follow politics on a regular basis. I'm hopeful that perhaps we can see something like that on a local level. Like we need those organizations that are pushing a grassroots movement to get people involved in your local school board elections, your local city council elections, your judges, your commissioners, in the same way that we did back when we were doing the Tea Party. Because we've seen the damage that can be done now. And also the individuals that get their start.
I was just going to say, you got a farm team.
And they work through the system and they end up in these higher positions of power when the truth of the matter is, if people were paying attention early on, they could have been thwarted long before they ever ended up there.
Yes, or elevated, right? If you find someone who's great on the school board, they might become your next state rep. They might be the next, you know, they might run for Congress. And you can see how they go and you can see a voting record and you can hear their speeches if it's covered. Local news, too, is, you know, becomes so pared down that nobody's watching these boards, that nobody's watching these councils, no one's covering them because they're, you know, there's no local Wright County Journal Press reporter that can necessarily cover all those boards. So.
Right. You know, and I'm glad, you know, John, your point about the Tea Party, it's kind of analogous. You look at it, this happened, that movement came up in the aftermath of a presidential campaign where you had a party switch, right? And you had somebody running who was he was running on hope and change. He wasn't really saying anything specific. This time you had a guy running as I'm not the other guy, right?
Right.
So you had a lot of folks that were voting for someone that maybe didn't say, well, I didn't vote for this, right? And so now they're finding, well, you know, in that case it was, I'm going to be forced to pay for, you know, health insurance and do all these things, or I'm going to lose my health care. Now it's, well, I didn't vote for, you know, having people being forced to, you know, get a vaccine or have us, you know, we were supposed to be able to take the masks off if we got the vaccine. So you're getting the same kind of, I think the same kind of pushback against, you know, overreach of government. And I think you're right. I think you're seeing what's, you know, they said that they called it something last time. I think you're seeing kind of the equivalent of the Tea Party. And I think it's a broader coalition this time. I don't think it's just a conservative group. I think there's a lot of parents, regardless of political ideology, that don't like the way that the schools are handling this right now.
Well, and a lot of more people are paying attention just to the school board situation. A lot of people are paying more attention to the school board meetings now because of things like critical race theory. Yep. Because there is a, for lack of a better term, there's an entertainment level to it, right? There's an interest in it for people that don't normally follow it, where the parents are mad, they're getting in fights, what's going on, but it is bringing a lot of attention to it. To what you were saying too, we didn't have it this morning, and almost, I think Sam almost put it in her top five, but there was a new poll that came out. The vast majority of people do not want to see individuals being fired for vaccine mandates,
yep.
Right? And I think you're right. I think that assuming that the victory for Biden was on the up and up, and we're actually going to get into a little bit of what those results really were from the Arizona audit next hour. But let's just go with, you know, Biden won with that many votes. I think you're right. I think a lot of people were like, I'm done with the 4 years of the turmoil that we had surrounding Trump. I'm going to, you know, elect this shell, you know, of a man and hope that things return to normal. And that's not at all what's happened in a very, very short period of time. And
even in the Democrat endorsing, right, or in their primary, in their primaries, he was almost invisible in that field of 15 or 20 or 100 or however many Democrats were running for president at the time. He was largely invisible, almost silent, and somehow he came through that process.
Almost wasn't winning.
Yeah,
I mean,
he was almost DOA in his candidacy all of a sudden everybody, you know,
Drop.
Oh, his buddy Barack made a few phone calls. All of a sudden, a bunch of people dropped out, and he's now the front runner.
Yeah.
You know, he wins Super Tuesday.
Suddenly, you know, Tulsi Gabbard is now, you know, a product of, you know, of Russia and Putin.
Yeah.
You know, Bernie, it can't be Bernie. Well, he needs to be that guy. And he was anointed. I mean, look, he was.
He was.
He was anointed by the left. And because of everything that we've seen so far. Because of things like today, $3.5 trillion infrastructure bill. you know, the people, you know, the left and the Pelosi's are like, no, that's the guy because we can potentially do all of this. All right, more coming up. We will get into the lawsuits and get the thoughts of the roundtable. Amy Koch and Jeff O'Brien on, again, students, members of our military. You have the healthcare industry filing lawsuits against the vaccine mandates. And I got a fascinating article. We've been holding on to this, onto it this week from the Federalist, though. We will talk a bit about the Arizona 2020 vote audit finds potentially election-shifting numbers of illegal ballots, right? And we know it's been reported in the mainstream media, but there is a lot of really interesting details that puts, you know, another big, huge question mark. Not saying it was the big lie, but these are things that we need to talk about if we're going to have any sort of faith in our electoral process. It's all coming up on Twin Cities News Talk.